Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I just got an email from our good friend Jeff Snyder about the repo market. As you guys know, probably from watching a couple of my videos yesterday, I discussed how Jeff. I just spoke with Jim Grant, so I've got that on my mind here. But how Jeff and Emil yesterday, or maybe the day prior, we're talking about how the repo fails in the repo market, and how that may be kind of an ominous sign, a bit of a canary in the coal mine. But I tried to get some further clarification so I could get my mind around how the mechanics actually work and to better understand the repo market, because a lot of people look to me for advice or for an explanation as to how the plumbing works. But trust me, I only know just the tip of the iceberg. So let's get into this email that Jeff sent me. I'll show you guys the actual diagram that he sent me. And let's think through this. And I think it's gonna blow your mind. I don't think that's hyperbolic to say that. So sit down and buckle up and let's dive into this email. I think you guys are really gonna love it. So this is the chart or diagram that Jeff sent me. And my question to him was, I know the repo market, or when we think of the repo market, we think of the transactions just being cash for collateral. So you have a mortgage-backed security or a treasury. You need some liquidity. You need some cash overnight or for 2 weeks, 30 days, what have you. So you say, okay, banks in the repo market or lenders, I'm going to go ahead and offer my collateral, my treasury, and I'll give you that. So it's like a collateralized loan, but you give me the $100 million I need, and then we'll go ahead and swap back in 2 weeks at the end of the term or tomorrow, and I'll pay you a little bit more than you give me in the loan, and that'll be the interest rate. So we know how that works, but Jeff was talking about how there could be collateral for collateral repos. And so that's what my question was really pertaining to. And so he said, yeah, you can do collateral for collateral. It's this roundabout way. And it really gives you insight as to how, when we look at the repo fails, or we look at the data for not just the repo market, but for the dollar monetary system. I mean, I would say the exact same thing for M2 money supply. That's why I'm always very hesitant when I talk about M2. I always say M2, but then I say, you know, keep in mind, this is a very basic view of what's happening. This is not the complete picture. And I think this diagram, once we go through, will give you the idea or an idea as to why we really don't understand what's happening in the global banking system, not even close. I mean, we're just barely scratching the surface. So to try to determine, as an example, how Russian sanctions will affect the banks in Europe or the price of nickel, when we really, not only can we not see those banks' balance sheets and how they're managing or manipulating their balance sheets to take on more and more leverage, so not only can we not see that, but we can't even see how the monetary system itself is even functioning. And there's so much of this going on in the shadows that unless you're paying attention, there's just really no way that you can accurately assess the probabilities of certain things happening in the future, such as consumer price inflation. So, but before I get too far off on a tangent here, let's go through this diagram. So Jeff, his example starts by looking at the Argentine government. So they need dollars, okay? But they don't have any treasuries. They don't have any thing that would be acceptable, let's say, for the repo market for them to pledge to get the dollars they need, the liquidity. So I'll just go ahead and read this right off the page here to make sure I'm not missing something. So the government of Argentina needs dollars, but can't get them from the banks in the euro dollar market. It goes to a domestic bank and floats a dollar euro bond. Now, this dollar euro bond, why they're floating it to Bank A, which is this Argentine bank, they can't take that and go into global repo and get the dollar, because the number one, they probably have to pay an astronomical interest rate, because who wants that collateral? And so there's a lot of risk there. So they need better collateral, but how do you get it? That's the question. So they give this euro bond to the Argentinian bank and say, hey, help us out here. And the Argentinian bank says, it's just the euro bond, so we can't do anything with it either. But if we get Bank B involved, maybe we can. So step two, not wanting to use the euro bond as collateral to obtain the dollars to give to the Argentinian government, Bank A contacts Bank B to transform the euro bond, basically junk collateral, into pristine U.S. treasuries. It pledges the junk to Bank B to start the process. So Argentinian government gives Bank A the euro bonds. Bank A can't do anything with them in repo. So again, remember, the objective is to get dollars to the Argentinian government.
Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today.
So they say, hey, Bank B, can you, and Bank B, by the way, is not another Argentinian bank, or else they'd do it themselves. What differentiates them is Bank B is a global dealer bank, okay? It has a relationship with the Argentinian bank. So the Argentinian bank says, hey, we've got these euro bonds. We can't really use them because we need to go into repo. What we need are U.S. treasuries. Can you help us out with that? And the global dealer bank says, of course we can, for a fee. So the global dealer bank goes to global insurance company C, and this is where it gets interesting. So global insurance company C is reaching for yield. Why? Well, maybe it's because the Fed's pushing them out the yield curve, or the risk curve, right? We talk about that all the time. I just talked about it a couple hours ago with Jim Grant. So there's the plot thickens, let's say. So reaching for yield, insurance company C seeking to increase the returns on its low yielding safe assets, i.e. treasuries, will charge Bank B a small fee to borrow some of those safe assets, again, usually U.S. treasuries. So then the U.S. treasuries go from global insurance bank or company C to the global dealer bank. The global dealer bank that is in possession of the euro bonds as collateral, then they send, or quote unquote relend, what Jeff is saying, back to the Argentinian bank. So they relend the treasuries they got, that they borrowed, by the way, from the global insurance company. They relent those to Argentina Bank A. So then what does Argentina Bank do? Well, they take those treasuries and they go into global repo. And just to make sure I'm not missing anything here, let's read exactly what Jeff is saying, his own words. So going back to step four here, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Bank B, now in possession of insurance company C's U.S. treasuries, relends those treasuries back to Bank A. Step five, Bank A utilizes the twice borrowed U.S. treasury to borrow and roll over U.S. in global repo markets. Basically takes the twice borrowed U.S. treasuries to lend or use as collateral, I should say, in the global repo market. And from the repo market standpoint, it's just another plain vanilla funding transaction on the best collateral. So you just think about if you were the counterparty in the repo market and the Argentinian bank was coming to you and saying, hey, we need $1 billion and we've got $1 billion worth of treasuries as collateral. You'd say, yeah, no problem. Sounds good. What you didn't know is what was going on behind the surface of the water, because you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. But when you put your head beneath the surface, then you can see the rest of the iceberg. You see all of the shenanigans that are going on prior to you getting the U.S. treasuries as collateral in the first place. This is what we call rehypothecation, and this is what Jeff calls the collateral multiplier, right? So as you guys can see what's going to happen here. So then the Argentinian bank gets the dollars they need, and then those dollars go where? To the Argentinian government for those basically dollars that are backed by the garbage euro bonds in the first place. But these four entities know what's going on, but the counterparty in global repo has absolutely no clue. So this is another reason why I always say that the dollar supply is simply a function of commercial banks' ability to manage their balance sheet. This is what we're seeing here, and perceived counterparty risk. Because if the perceived counterparty risk is very low, then this repo is going to happen at a low. If the counterparty risk is very high, then not only will this repo most likely not happen, but none of this would happen either. Therefore, the collateral multiplier would decrease. If the collateral multiplier decreases, then the amount of dollars that are created as a result of this credit creation, this dollar credit creation and dollar expansion on the liability and asset side of the balance sheets here would not happen. And therefore, the amount of dollars in the overall system, when you include the dollars in the shadows and the tip of the iceberg, which would be M2 money supply, actually decreases. And then on the flip side of that coin, if there is very low or very little perceived counterparty risk, then the collateral multiplier will increase significantly, and so will the amount of dollars that are being created in aggregate total. Again, when you combine the tip of the iceberg, M2 money supply, and then what's hiding beneath the surface, which is the euro dollar market. All right, guys. Well, we'll go ahead and end it there. That gives you some food for thought, hopefully. And as always, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Make sure that you're always standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. We'll see you in the next video.